Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to another edition of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 83, being recorded on the 1st of July, 2015. I'm Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter. How are you doing, Kale?
All good, Sujit.
Good. This is the long weekend coming up, so almost everybody is off at Microsoft. It seems like that. I'm at my customer, and everybody's off. So, are you back at home, or are you still out in your customer site right now?
Yeah, I'm out in the field. I'll be coming home tomorrow. So,
tomorrow. Okay, great. Figured, you know, there's a lot of new items that have come up that are worth talking about, and there's this overall topic. I think the most important one, I think, is this new billing API. So we'll call the show about the new billing API, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But why don't we get our listeners up to date on some of the new announcements? There were quite a few just this past week, actually. And starting off with the Azure Key Vault, which is now generally available. I think we may have briefly, you know what, we need to do a show on the Azure Key Vault. We never did a show on this, did we?
No, I don't think so. This would be a good one. And now since it's GA, it's probably maybe a little bit more relevant for people.
Exactly. Because, you know, I know you're a developer and, you know, I do some Azure development as well. You know, we have this issue of dealing with secrets, right, in our applications. Typically, we'll put it in an app.config file or some source code, maybe it's even hard-coded, you know, security by obscurity, which is never a good idea. And sometimes it's in a database of some sort, this kind of secrets like keys or some kind of, you know, password, things like that. And those things are not secure, and Microsoft wanted to make a place where you could put all that stuff in a secure way, and it's basically locked down with this thing known as the HSM, or the Hardware Security Module. I suppose it's some sort of a hardware encryption device of some sort that they have up in the cloud. And so this Azure Key Vault service lets you, you know, it's a service that lets you save all these secrets securely up in Azure. And then your application can, there's an API, I guess, which you can go and retrieve them and use them as and when you require them. So that thing is now GA in all places except Australia. Don't know why, not yet Australia. Maybe some local laws or things that they have to adhere to, but it's not yet there. Next one up is, this one, you may be familiar with this one. I think you're close to the Azure Active Directory Connect, Kale?
Yeah, actually, this is something that's close to me because a lot of customers, you know, they start out, you know, with a public cloud, and one of the first and most popular apps that people use in Azure is Office 365. And so right away, with Office 365, if you're trying to integrate, and most people are, their on-premises Active Directory or infrastructure, we had tools in the past to help synchronize those identities. Because, you know, we either have to have separate identities, which is not a great idea because there's more passwords to maintain, more management, or you can do this synchronization task. And it used to be called DirSync, was the previous version of the tool. Mm-hmm. But now they have this new tool called Azure Active Directory Connect, which encompasses a couple other little features in there too. But I think one of its primary focuses is around how do we synchronize identities up there to the cloud and provide things like single sign-on, you know, enable federation and those kind of things to work.
Okay, so does this replace those tools completely, or are the other tools, are they work side by side with DirSync and ADSync?
This is the basically the new version of DirSync. So yeah, they'll eventually go away. This is the tool. It's been out in preview for a while, and It's been recommended to kind of get into this one because it has all the new features in it. But because it wasn't GA, a lot of customers were just kind of, just getting their feet wet with it. They weren't really using it in production as much. Now it's GA, that won't be the case. But it uses some of the same technology we've had for years with identity management. We used to have, I think we had bought a product a long time ago. It was called MMS, Microsoft Meta Directory Services, which became MIIS, which was Microsoft Identity Integration, and then it became ILM, and then it became FIM, and now I think it's MIM. So it's changed names a lot, but it's all about identity management and synchronization of identities.
But I mean, those tools are more full-fledged, right? They have the workflow and everything around them. I think this is not, this is more of a just a connector kind of thing, right?
Yeah, this one's a connector, but there's and if you need the full-fledged one, actually, there's a link for it, like right up in Azure Active Directory now, which is kind of cool. So you can get, if you're looking for the actual enterprise full-blown tool to do this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a lightweight version. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, the next one up is this. I think we may have mentioned this before, the Azure SQL Data Warehouse, now in limited public preview. And we'll put a link to all this, of course, in our show notes, where you can go and sign up for the preview. But essentially, this is our big data warehouse in the cloud, right? Something that can scale to petabytes if required. It's a columnar data warehouse service, that's fully compatible, integrated with SQL Server. It's built on top of SQL Server, actually. And of course, you get all those powerful tools like SQL BI, I mean, Microsoft Power BI. You can use with HD Insight as a data source, the machine learning service, and also the Data Factory, which we have spoken about on this podcast before. I mean, if I think this is like SQL BI for Azure kind of thing, right? Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah, I'm interested in this, and I think we should probably do a show about this as well, because I think it varies a little bit from some of the other offerings that we have. It's a unique thing, and I'm wondering how it applies to. There's some other competitors out in the market, right? There's to speak about Amazon. I think they have something called Redshift or something
Redshift.
like that. Is it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's similar, and I'm just wondering what the difference is, because I don't use these as much, so.
Well, this one is more the very large parallel processing service, right? So there's not just all the tools and the power of doing data warehousing, but it's also that very, like, you can scale it up into many, many nodes. I think what we used to call it the PWD, right? Parallel
Oh,
PDW,
the parallel data
the
warehouse.
parallel
Yeah.
data warehouse. I think
Yep.
this is the service incarnation of the parallel data warehouse. So
So this is is this a PaaS offering then, Sajid, or is this a infrastructure, or how's this work?
it looks like a PaaS offering to me.
Okay.
It's got its own billing model, as you can see, right? So it's something that is you pay on demand. You can just scale it up, scale it down, and use it
Yeah, I
only
see.
for at the end of the week or the end of the month or whenever you do these kind of jobs.
Yeah, I've seen I've read a little bit about it from the scaling perspective, and it seems like it's taking advantage of maybe some of that stuff that we had the gentleman on to speak a couple weeks ago about how they can do that elastic SQL and kind of
Yes.
scale up and scale down.
Exactly. Yep. And then talking of SQL, we've been talking about how SQL Server can scale out. You can have multiple instances of it, but I think there's been this requirement to scale up a SQL Server, and now they're offering this new P3 premium performance level for Azure SQL Database. I guess a more powerful instance of SQL Server, if you so wish, for those computations that are more demanding. Kind of similar to what we just described with the parallel data warehouse, but this is a single instance that is a lot more powerful, and we're not scaling out, but we're scaling up. And so this will be available. I think it's always been available, but I think they're going to rename it now. What are they going
Yeah,
to rename?
I think what this was about was so we had the original PaaS offering of Azure SQL Database, and then I mean way back, like that was one of the first services we had, along with Service Bus and Worker Rules and things. And then But the performance, you know, because of the way that actually functions behind the scenes, you know, there's three commits that happen locally, and then you can do geo-redundant async. But the performance was substantially less than, you know, running the on-premises SQL database where you can control it a little bit closer, right. And understandably because it's multi-tenant. But so I think one of the biggest – this was huge, you know, because customers were – you know, if you wanted to use that, then you had to kind of change your app a little bit because we recommended using things like caches and putting
right.
things like that in front of them to kind of insulate that because it was great, you know, from a backup perspective. Like, you don't have to manage backups as much. You can still do snapshots and things with PaaS/SQL, but you don't have to, you know, closely manage them, you know, from that perspective, like the backups and disaster recovery and things. But the performance was, like, the big deal, right? They said, well, we just can't move to that because we either have to change our app or, you know, we got to do these things. So, like, they started bringing out these bigger SKUs, which are awesome because they have great performance. And I think what this news was about this week was they had a P3, which I believe was the top one, and now it's they're renaming it to, like, a P6, and it says there's no impact to that. But I think what's happening is we're seeing larger and more performant more processing power come into there, so they're just making room for that.
So making room for the other P levels. Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent. And then there's this little discussion about, you know, we've talked about app insights in the past and also operational insights briefly. We should talk a little more about that. But there's been some confusion about what role these two insight services play. I think I'm more closely, and most developers are very close to the app insights model, which is, you know, no-brainer nowadays, right? You just add it in Visual Studio, you check a box, and you automatically get all these, all that telemetry up in Azure. Track keeps track of, you know, the response times and where there could be bottlenecks and things like that fairly automatically. And you can also programmatically add to the App Insights collectors model and add your own data points as well. Now, Operation Insights came along, and there's been some confusion about when you would use Operational Insights. And so that's more for, I think we were talking about it earlier, Kale, that's more for getting a view of all your services together. Is that what Operational Insights gives you?
Yeah, I think the way I look at it when people ask me about this, I look at App Insights as like a very kind of narrow focus thing, right? It's like about this application. And it's usually typically agentless. There is ones that can run on the server side, but mostly if you're putting it in your, let's say, a web application, like you said, Suji, you're checking a box, and either it's a little piece of JavaScript or a little bit of code back there to actually just send this stuff up to a service, essentially, whatever your triggers are, if they're custom or if they're just standard, you know, alerts from your application.
Right.
So that's kind of what I see App Insights being. It's more developer focused. It's obviously it's part of, you know, Visual Studio. That's where it came out of. It was on Visual Studio Online. That used to be the portal for it. Now it's in the preview portal, some of the dashboarding and that kind of thing. But then App Insights came along, and App Insights, you know, that's kind of a different animal from what I see. It's so it's agent-based. It's using the same – it's called the MMA agent, which is the same one we use for System Center and some of our other products. But that MMA is just the standard agent that we put out there that we can run on full-blown machines like VMs or on-premises boxes even to collect telemetry and things about the health of the thing. You know, typically when you're running big enterprise applications, you have to make sure that things are monitored, like how much disk space, what's the CPU doing, how much memory, you know, all the normal healthcare things on the machine.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes people use third party, sometimes they're using System Center stuff. But there's also this App Insights now that we can use to do that. So you can basically, you can provision this thing in the cloud. It's kind of cool. So if you had VMs running up there in Azure, you could set up App Insights, and then you could say target these machines, and it'll go out and actually like put the agent on the machines for you. And get those things running, and then you'll start to see things surface through the dashboard, and then you can obviously customize that. But I look at it like as like that, you know, from a monitoring, some alerting, and then also capacity planning. So it can do things like show you, which is really awesome. So you could say, I have all these workloads up in the cloud. How's my storage system doing up there? Like, how am I doing? Am I, like, reaching close to where my thresholds are? Should I be watching that? And this thing can kind of correlate and bring all that stuff together from all your workloads that you have running up there, so you can get like a holistic view of your data center up there, kind of.
Right. Oh, that's well put, actually. So, I take it most app developers should consider both of them, right? Not just one. I'm guessing, at least from an application developer, they're going to directly work with App Insights, but they should keep Operational Insights in mind as well.
Yeah, I see that like a DevOps thing. I mean, I really see that being, that piece of the guys who are in between there. Probably the guys who are actually writing the code for the applications are probably less interested in how the data center's doing. They're more interested in how's my app doing, like how's it performing. This is more like IT bigger focused, like who's managing the data center. Maybe a little bit on the IT pro side, but DevOps, I think there's definitely some dev part of it too, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I know we use the word DevOps a lot in the show, and I only got, I guess, an appreciation for the term recently in terms of what it actually means, and at least for me. And I think I was reading an article about the way Netflix, for example, does their services. It's always cited as being one of the leaders in offering APIs and services for all the stuff that they offer inside of Netflix. And the way that they work is that each team kind of works manages everything. They manage the development, the deployment, the production running. So they're all very small teams that operate these microservices. But they do everything from soup to nuts, right? From the, and that's where the word DevOps has a lot of meaning, because the developer is actually doing the operational aspects of the service as well, not just deploying it, not just writing it and deploying it, but they're also doing the operational aspects. And it's all right. So in that model, I think having something like Operational Insights is very key, because not only do they get that insight into the application, but now the same team can sit back and say, okay, let me see how all my services are doing, working together, and how the overall system is performing. So definitely.
Yeah, I think the other big part that's kind of cool about Op Insights is it kind of runs on everything. So it's like, I just mentioned that you can deploy it to VMs and all the different workloads that we have in Azure, but you can also do AWS, you can do on-premises, Linux, Windows. I mean, this thing runs on pretty much everything, so
So
that's
pulls in
really nice.
everything together. Yep.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay, so we'll get to kind of the main topic for today, which is something I gotta say. I mean, I don't know. We've been talking about this for forever now. People have been asking for this. I'm just so glad that Scott Guthrie finally put out a blog explaining that this came out recently, which is the new Azure billing APIs. And let me just prefix it by giving some background as to why these billing APIs have been so much in demand, and people have been asking for it for almost forever. So, and obviously, if you're a little developer, you have a single Azure subscription, right? And you have a bunch of services, cloud services or whatever, databases and things like that. And you can see everything that, you're paying for. It's all, you get an idea as to what your spending is for now, for the month, and you can project some of that spending as well for the rest of the month. But a typical organization is not going to have these individual subscriptions, because they typically have many departments that are using Azure, and now all these departments have to share or have to report up all their usage on Azure for each of their individual products that they have put out in the cloud. And this has been a problem for companies for now, until now, because they only got the one usage, which is, okay, this is your overall usage for all your services. It was never broken down into specific departments or allow them to, segregate things and get reporting out of from in each individual department in your in the company. And this is now what the Azure Usage API and the Azure Rate Card API let you do, which is the two new APIs that came out recently, is exactly lets you do that. Now, have you, is this something that you've seen in customers asking for, Kale?
No, I haven't had the specific ask for it, but when the whole idea of resource groups came along, I think this was one of the things that was kind of being talked about was, or make this would enable, you know. So if we had the ability to kind of group resources up there, what could we do with that data? Like, what would that tell us? I mean, we could do things like target them with scripts and the kind of techie stuff, but what about, like, you know, like this stuff? So can we tell that a certain department in an enterprise is using a lot more resources than another, or vice versa, kind of thing? I think that's kind of a cool thing. So, you know, when I talk about resource groups, I always kind of mention that these are some of the use cases for why you would want to do that, because people say, why do I need to do all these tagging and resource things up there? And is it going to give me that much benefit in the end, And I think these things are the realization of that. But
Absolutely, yeah. And you mentioned a good thing, which is the tagging. The whole system works on these tags. I know I have seen them when I create resources or services in Azure. Got to be honest with you. I mean, as an individual developer, you don't bother to set a tag. But as an enterprise organization, you got to be sure to set tags on every resource, every database, every queue, everything that you storage item that you create in the Azure portal. And the tags are just a freeform text, but you want to have some meaning to them. For example, you could say it's a department, whatever, XYZ, you know, or some particular project name, etc. Whatever, and however you want to tag it, you create a tag for every item that you create. And now that you've created now that you've created this tag, you can use the Azure Usage API to get detailed usage information on all the services and storage items that are in Azure, broken down by tag. So you can say this project has used up, you know, so many dollars of CPU, so many dollars of storage, so many dollars of SQL, so much of networking, whatever, you know, all the various pieces combined. And it's very easy for them, for the organization, to kind of create some sort of a chargeback model when that happens and say, okay, you know, this is what your app cost us. And, you know, then they can work it out internally how they want to how they want to handle that. But at least now they have the data to do that. And then more importantly is, you know, that kind of shows you what you've used, but the other part of it is what how to project your usage. Like, how much is this going to cost me, right, if I were to do this? And so they have another API, which is the Azure Rate Card API, and that gives you detail cost information for various resources, and then you could then use that cost information and say, okay, I'm going to need, you know, so many hours of CPU, so many storage, so much this, so much that, and over so much time, and then you can project what that cost is going to work out to. And so these two APIs, I think, are very critical. They're, I guess, the standard REST APIs. Applications, I mean, companies can use these APIs directly if you want to, and you can start taking advantage of them right now. But I think the biggest benefit is going to be with some of these partner solutions out there that are available, because we're talking of a lot of information here. We're talking a lot of, you know, you want to try and integrate information that's in Azure from these rate card APIs as well as the usage APIs, but also take in information from the customer's requirements, put it all together, and present these, you know, amazing what if analysis, or show you detailed charts, breakdowns, you know, all the fancy pie charts and everything that I suppose the CFOs and whatnot like to see. They can see all this now, and there are vendor products that let you do all these kind of analysis. So I think some of the vendors mentioned in Scott Guthrie's blog were Cloudyn and Cloud Cruiser. They've got some really nice products that essentially will take advantage of these APIs to give you this very deep insight into both your usage as well as your projected usage.
I think that's huge, yeah, Sujeet. When we put things in the cloud, people sometimes they say, "Well, it's going to be cheaper. I'm going to save money doing this," and these kind of things. And being able to say, here's what we're actually doing, and here's what we're kind of projecting for the next X time, and how we're growing. and being able to like present that back to, like you said, some of the senior management at the team, that's huge. I mean, because otherwise, it's very hard to get this information out. You know, when you stand up like a couple resources in Azure, it's pretty easy to, you know, keep track of things and say, this is how much it's costing me. I mean, we have MSDN licenses and things, so you have like, you know, X amount of dollars per month, and you kind of keep tabs on that and watch it. But once you get a couple hundred or a couple thousand resources up there, it's much harder to kind of figure out like which piece is costing me the most money. Is this actually cheaper? What am I spending my most money on, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, of course, we all know that you know, going to any cloud solution like Azure is meant to reduce your cost, but you've got to justify that by giving them detailed information, right? If the CFO has made a bet, okay, we're going to save costs by going to the cloud. You got to back that up with some hard numbers, and now you can say these applications were more cost effective because they moved to the cloud, or vice versa. It could also reveal an unnecessary spend on some applications. They might see an application like, why is this taking, I don't know, $10,000 a month to run? We run it for like one hour a month. Why is it taking? And then, you know, you realize that somebody forgot to turn it off, you know, something like that.
Well, I think that's cool, just kind of like what we were talking about a minute ago with Op Insights. So being able to maybe correlate some of this data together to say, so the IT group this month, they have a couple applications over there. They spent X amount of dollars. And like you said, you say, wait, this seems abnormally high. Is there some reason? And if you could look at the Op Insights and say, oh, well, the data storage has grown, 120% this month. So I could see things like that. Obviously, storage is very cheap. That was probably a bad thing to bring up, but maybe the size of VMs, like you said, like you say, why is this costing so much? Or maybe we have too big a SKU of VM and it's actually sitting there idle all the time. So I think these kind of tools, and like you said, the partners building these solutions on top to kind of bring this data together is pretty powerful.
Exactly. They have a whole bunch of samples up on GitHub that show you how to do these. You call these REST APIs. I hope that at some point they actually make an SDK out of it, because I hate calling it REST APIs directly. They're a pain in the neck to use. You have to figure out the formats and, you know, the JSON and whatnot. So I'm sure they'll make a fancy SDK of this at some point, but for now there's REST APIs out there, and there's sample code telling you on GitHub, and we'll put show notes in the show notes. We'll put links to that. Some console applications would show you how to do aggregated usage information, things like that. It seems fairly simple. It's just, you know, dealing with REST APIs is always all this fluff code you have to write to make the connection and get the token and, you know, all that stuff. So they've kind of provided some source code for that. But yeah, I like some of these partner products though, and maybe we should have some of these partners on the show at some point. We'll reach out to them, because this is critical information, I think, that we're exposing and we're finally making available to our customers. The one thing it was not clear to me is if there is a cost to using the usage API. That was not clarified. Or is that
And
a
then
free existence?
there'll be another API on top of that about how much free you're getting.
Boy, that
I
would be
haven't seen
bad.
any. Yeah, I haven't seen anything specific on that, so I don't know, what to check the pricing sheets up there. That's the ones on the public site that show our pricing and see if there's anything there. But typically, those things are at least rate limited, so you can't constantly, slam them. I don't know. I haven't seen any cost information.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that you're going to, it's like pulling down a report, right? You run them occasionally. You're not going to run them 7 by 24 in a loop or something like that. Yeah, so I don't
And
think
they
that
used
should be a
to,
problem.
yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they used to, what we did have previous to this was like CSV files. Like you could download these pretty coarse CSV files to get a sense for what resources were being used and
Right.
whether you were a regular customer or EA. I think the EA guys got it sent to them automatically every month. But you could just go up to the billing section and download it.
Yep, and now you can do it, on demand, which is a nice thing. So you could see in different parts every week, maybe you get a snapshot and things like that.
Cool.
Excellent. Well, that's good. So we'll help our customers try that out, our listeners, that is, and we'll So we'll follow up if there's any more enhancements in this area. Anything
And
else?
that's in preview, right? Sujeet,
It's
this isn't GA or anything.
a public preview right now, correct?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, we should definitely, like you said, get some of the vendors on here, the partners, and talk about their solutions. Because if you take a look at, and we'll put that link in the show note from Scott Gu, he has some snapshots or some screenshots of these tools, and they look awesome. Like they really show you a breakdown that's really nice and over time and all that kind of thing. So it's interesting stuff.
Indeed, it is. And with that, I think we can wrap up the show here. I know it's a long weekend coming up, so wish you and all our listeners happy 4th of July. And we'll see you next week.
See you guys next week. Thanks for joining.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.